Accession number 22083, Reel 10.
Could we talk about the conditions in camp at Buna?
Yes, well, it was right on the beach. It had only been about 15, 20 yards to the water, and the coconut palms went right down to the beach, and all around the coconut palms was heaps of coconuts because they'd never been harvested, and they were full of rats, and of course they used to live on the coconuts. And the first night we were there, the rats used to run up under the over the top of the tent. There used to be a fly over the top of the tent, but they'd run in between the fly and the tent. They used to use it for a race course, I think. And so I made a trap. I got two kerosene tins, and I sunk one into the ground, and I made the other one sat on top of it, and I put a platform on it, and a tin of cheese in the far end of it, and the rats had run up the ramp sort of thing, and then I had it finally balanced so that when they got to the other end of it, it'd tip in and they'd drown in the water. I got 13 one night, and the first night. But the first thing I caught in it was a kitten. It could smell the cheese and it went into the trap. And then we hooked it out and let it go. And then every now and then you'd hear this, the trap would go, and you'd hear the rats scratching on the side of the 4 gallon drum. Well, we cleaned up quite a few. When we weren't unloading barges or anything like that, we'd be playing cards. We'd play bridge or poker. And I started to make souvenir rings, and I'd get a piece of duralium. I never had any tools, and I used to punch a hole through the duralium. And I had a rat tail file, and I'd ream it out with that, and then I used to make a flat surface on the top and put the battalion colour patch in it, and I'd sell them to the Yanks for 10 bob each, and I found out that they were selling for £5 each, so they were making a good thing of it. They'd taken them back to their camp and selling them to their mates.
Where was their camp in relation to yours?
It would have been about 10, 15 mile further down the back towards the, what would it be, the eastern end of New Guinea, like Papua New Guinea. I think the airdrome was Nadzab, but I wouldn't guarantee that to be right.
What was the feeling between the Americans and yourselves on the island at that time?
Oh, we we got on all right with the troops up there. They were mostly Air Force blokes that we came in contact with. And, of course, there was a lot of the landing craft. They were handled by Americans.
Was there ever, at this point, was there ever a feeling of being sort of second rate to the American soldiers?
Oh, I don't think so. Not that I can think of, at any rate. As a matter of fact, at Scarlet Beach, there was an American there. He was awarded the Congressional Medal of Honor. I was just reading in the book there a while ago, our blokes thought the world of him. They reckon, of course, the poor bugger, he got killed. He didn't live to get his medal, but he was in a machine gun emplacement on Scarlet Beach when Nips came back along the beach in a barge and landed, and they dropped a grenade on him. And but he, not before he'd cleaned up quite a few of them. And,
this was to be in the Finch Harbour.
The Song River, where Scarlet Beach was, would be about roughly 4 or 5 miles from Finchhaven, to the east of Finchhaven.
Well, we can talk about your involvement with that a little later. I was interested to know whether you've ever felt that the Americans were getting more important jobs to do, for instance.
No, well, I never ever thought about it. I know towards the end of the war, some of the blokes thought that what we were doing was just second rate sort of thing, you know. For instance, they could have gone round Borneo and starved them out, although they wouldn't have starved because there was that much on the island, like bananas and fruit and that sort of stuff, that they could have lived there forever. I know in one... I'm getting off the track now.
All right.
In Borneo, they were eating bamboo shoots, you know. We got into one place, as we were going up the river, they must have heard us coming, and they shot through, and... he was bamboo shoots cooking on the fire. So they'd have made do, like they used to cart dried fish around with them and used to stink to high heaven. It was as bad as a corpse, I think.
How often in your camp, you know, would you experience Japanese raids? You mentioned that there were raids on the oil drums that you would set up.
Oh, yeah, well, I suppose for the entire time that I was there, there wouldn't be more than half a dozen raids, I don't think. And there was, what I can remember now, there was only two or three planes at a time come over. But on one occasion, we were standing on the beach at Bune, and we saw these lightnings go up. That was the Americans' P-39s. And... one of our chaps had a radio, and it was on the same wavelength as their radio, and we could hear everything that they were saying. And I can well remember one bloke, he said, "Look out, buddy, there's a effer on your tail," he said. And with that, the bloke dived. We could see them. And every now and then you'd hear something hit the water, and it was a nip plane. They used to hit the water and it'd sizzle. And even though they were a long way away, you could hear them. A sort of a sizzling sound. And they never lost a plane that day anyway. But they knew they were coming, and they were up above them and waiting for them to come in, and they just pounced on them, and they were out to sea before they got anywhere near the land.
You mentioned earlier on that you were keen to get into the Japanese at that point. What was your feeling then of being in Bune, having to fill time and lugging equipment around?
Oh, well, actually, it was just like a big holiday. Swimming in beautiful water, and coral reefs. Yeah, one of our jobs was to get the garbage in a boat and take it out the other side of the reef and unload it. And on one occasion, there were in this boat, and there was a dirty big turtle come up. He had a head as big as a camel, I reckon. And He frightened the hell out of me until I woke up what he was. And now and then you'd see stingrays 5 and 6 feet across. They'd come up out of the water and jump. It was terrific. As I said, it was just like a big holiday as far as I was concerned. And then eventually the orders came to shift camp, and we had to pack up all the haversacks and packs and everything to take up to the battalion. And of course, while we were doing that, we disturbed a hell of a lot of rats. And there was one rat there, he was 2 foot from tip to tip. And there was about 8 blokes chasing him, trying to get him. And eventually he ran towards a ute, and there was a fellow standing on the back of the ute. And as he came up, he jumped down on him and killed him. But he was 2 foot long.
What did you do with the rats? Did you use them for anything?
No, we used to. But I never ever saw it myself, but my mate was telling me that the fuzzy wuzzies used to catch them and throw them on the coals and cook them and then eat them. But I never ever saw it. But I did see one of the women from the camp walking down the road with a pig on her breast, a little piglet, and she was feeding it. A lot of people won't believe that, but they do.
Seeing a few interesting things during your time in the war, particularly when you think of where you come from.
Yeah, well, yeah. That's for sure. To see the natives go up those coconut palms, they were like monkeys, you know. They go straight up and cut off a coconut, and we used to get the green ones and drink the milk out of them. And I tried it once. I climbed up the palm. And when I got up there, there was a nest of green ants. I don't know if you've ever seen them. They're green and they jump. They can jump at least a foot. And they had their nest up there. And when I got up to the top of them, they attacked me. And I slid down, and I was skinned from there down to here. Because we never used to wear army shorts. And on the bare skin, sliding down a palm tree. And that was one occasion. Something else I saw up there was the natives, they were having a sort of a corroboree, like our natives call them corroborees. I don't know what they call them up there. But they came along and they were in bird of paradise plumes and decked out with no end. And there was one old joker there, he had a hairdo that would have come out of Queen Victoria's time, I think. He had curls and they were all mud, you know, but piled up on top of his head and curls hanging down to his shoulder. He looked a real sight.
You mentioned that you would watch films. Where would the films be shown?
Down at the Air Force base.
The Americans base.
The Americans base. Yeah, that's there was one place in particular that they brought the show to our camp, and that was when the air raid was on. And as I said, he instead of dropping the bombs around us, they dropped about a mile away.
How did these occasions help to boost morale, and what was the feeling amongst the troops at that time?
Well, most of the battalion was away then, there was only a handful of us there. It was just another day. In the week, as far as we're concerned.
Do you recall any of the films that you may have seen?
No, I can't. But I can remember when the plane came over, there was some American Negroes there, and they just bloody took off like startled gazelles. They weren't going to hang around for anything. It makes me always think of the cartoon I saw of an American Negro, and an air raid was on, and he said, "Feet, if you don't get moving, we're going to part company." I always think of that when I think of that particular air raid.
I wanted to ask you, you mentioned that you were left out of battle for the lay experience.
Yeah.
Had you heard anything about the situation at that point in regard to success or not of lay?
No, I can't ever remember hearing anything until we got up there. And I landed at Scarlet Beach off her barge, and by then the campaign was just about over.
It had been, as I understand, quite a hard-fought campaign.
Yeah.
Certainly. To what degree was there a misunderstanding in relation to the numbers of Japanese, the strength of Japanese forces there?
No, I can't... I can't remember anything about that.
What was the condition of the place when you arrived?
Oh, there was nothing there. when I saw Finchhaven, there was just about half a dozen shacks sort of thing. It wasn't a town, as towns go. It was probably a trading post or something, but to the best of my memory, there was... Only a few broken down houses, and they'd been pulverised, you know, like shot up.
Had anyone told you the significance of Finchhaven at all? Did you understand why you were going there?
No, I think we were going up the. Up the coast, and the 7th Division, they were coming up through the Markham Valley, and we were to meet at Lay, and which we did do, but I don't know who got there first. The 2nd 16th reckon they got there first, and then we chased them out. So, the barrage, the artillery, and that our blokes sent over. The 16th had to get out, so otherwise they'd have been cleaned up. But they parachuted in, I believe, into the Markham Valley. I don't know where they took off from.
Who were your immediate commanders at that point?
A chap by the name of Joshua, Bob Joshua. He came to us from the 2nd 32nd Battalion and took over from Colonel Wayne. Is it Colonel Wayne? Yeah, I think it was. He took over from Colonel Wayne before we left Australia, and then he was relieved of his post sometime during the campaign, and Colonel Jeans took over. To the best of my memory, that is. I know Jeans took over from Joshua, and Jeans had been with the battalion from its inception to the day they broke it up. So.
As I understand, Finchhaven was a significant point on the strait between New Guinea and New Britain, the Vitiaz Strait. Was that something you were aware of at the time?
No, not as far as I knew. I didn't know. I dare say that we were briefed on what it was all about, but I can't remember it now. I should have kept a diary, but...
So what were your duties to entail at that particular time? We're talking around about October, November of 43, aren't we?
Yeah. That's when I was at Buna. Yeah, well, that's all we did. We just guarded the...
And then when you went to Finch Harbin and the lay experience, what did you have to do there?
Well, I just caught up with the battalion and and they were on their way back then. We set up positions up in the high ground behind Scarlet Beach, and that was what they called North Hill. And from then on, the battalion wasn't involved in any fighting at all until we went back to to Labuan, you know, like to Borneo.
You were to go to Borneo in 1945, I understand.
Yeah.
As I understand, the Finchhaven campaign was fought in pretty appalling conditions, and a lot of men got sick.
Right.
Tell us, as I understand, you got pretty ill as well.
Oh, I only got dengue, but that was the only bout that I had, but... there was others got scrub typhus and malaria and dengue. But
tell us what it's like to get dengue fever then.
Well, you got a hell of a headache, and you're hot, and you get hot, and then you get cold, and you're shivering, and you're as hot as hell. And it affects your waterworks, I think. It did mine, anyway. And I think I was about 4 or 5 days in the hospital. I think it was a hospital that I was in, or either that or an RAP.
Tell us what it was like to get to the hospital.
Well, I had a walk. I had a walk about... I was on top of North Hill when I first got crook, and I walked down the hill, which was more like a mountain than a hill, and I'd have to walk about a mile and a half, I suppose, 2 miles to the RAP, and they took my temperature, and I had a temperature of 104, so they said, right, you've got to go to hospital. And I walked back up the hill and picked up my gear and walked down to the hospital. So altogether, I suppose I walked about 5 miles while I was crook.
And what was the treatment for dengue fever?
I don't think they had any treatment, because we were always taking Adabrin for. The malaria, and I never ever got malaria while I was in the islands, but evidently the Adabrin didn't stop dengue fever, and it's dengue is brought about by a mosquito just the same as a malaria, I believe.
Did you have any understanding of the war outside of where you were at all?
Oh, we used to get reports on how things were going in other sections of New Guinea, like Balikpapan, and well, that was after, of course, but. We used to have our radio, and that's, you know, always listen to the news whenever we could. But
tell us then, what was to happen? What was the hospital like that you were to stay in?
Well, it was only a tent. it was a big tent, and it had bunks. What do you call them? The stretchers, like we were all issued with stretchers at that stage of the game, up till it wasn't until we went to Borneo that we had the stretchers. We used to make our make a bunk out of cut a couple of saplings and put some sticks across it, and we'd have what they call ponchos, they were like ground sheets, and they'd stretch them out over the top. I remember one night we had a downpour of rain, and the old ground sheet got full of water, and we used to share what we'd call our duva between the two of us, and the other bloke, I forget who he was now, he put his hand on it, and it all came down and came into where I was sleeping. I got soaking wet. So I can remember one bloke sleeping on a sheet of corrugated iron.
So what, up until this point in your experience in New Guinea, what had been the hardest thing other than the dengue fever that you'd experienced?
I don't think I never had anything very hard at all. It was a holiday as far as I was concerned.
Had the weather lived up to your brother's explanations?
The jungle that I was in was never... There was thicker jungle in Queensland than there was up around Finchhaven and Lae. What the troops encountered when they went in to do the fighting, I don't know, because I wasn't there. But
with the weather conditions, your brother had mentioned that it rained for an hour and drizzled for 23.
Yeah, dripped for 23. Yeah.
Was that?
No. That was on the Kokoda track, you see, but I think the conditions were entirely different. They were up in the mountains, and we were more or less on the coastline, and I think they would have got more rain up, higher up than we did down along the coast.
So what was to happen next? You were to come home, I understand.
We had Christmas on the Song River, I remember that.
What was that like?
Oh, unbelievable. We had roast turkey. The blokes made, the cooks made ovens. We helped them to make them. They made ovens out of drums, and they roasted these turkeys in it. The only thing that was missing was a bit of beer. We had plum puddings. We used to get plum puddings in tins, you know, like big, and Christmas cake. They used to send up Christmas cakes in 4-gallon tins. They were good too. And then after was sometime in January, I think we set off to come home. And I come home on a Liberty ship, and it was empty other than the troops of the battalion. And we were supposed to do our cooking on the deck. They had what they call fowler stoves, and there was a load of wood on the deck, and these fowler stoves, but it was too damn rough. You couldn't... The stoves were sliding from one end of the deck to the other, and well, where they could, because it was in places there was barriers where they couldn't go past. But as the ship went up, the stoves would slide down, and everybody was sick. Even the crew was seasick, That was an American Liberty boat.